Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk, given by Lama Kathy Wesley, is entitled Finding Inner Strength and Resolve. When we try to make changes in our lives, sometimes we meet with inner resistance and uncertainty, as giving up bad habits of the past can be difficult. But practicing three good habits will help us leave behind nostalgia for our bad habits and will give us the best chance to change our lives for the better. This talk also covers encouraging words for doing Dharma practice in the midst of concern about the worldwide coronavirus outbreak. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, and thanks for being here this week. So today, I'm going to be talking about our source of strength, because a lot of our life is spent working with things that are difficult. This is probably not news or a surprise to you at all, is that sometimes we confront things that are difficult. And sometimes we feel that those things we are confronting that are difficult are bigger than us. And of course, sometimes we're right. Those things that we're confronting or working with are bigger than us. And how do we keep ourselves inspired? How do we keep ourselves inspired to do our spiritual practice? How do we keep ourselves inspired with our purpose and meaning in life? How do we maintain that when things are difficult? And it's very interesting that I created the topic for this talk more than a month ago. And now, this week, we continue to read in the news that a lot of people have concern because there is a potential pandemic, actually, which has not happened in a very long time. And so people are telling me they're worried about it and concerned about it, and they feel it's bigger than they are. And they have some fears, worries, and concerns about it, and they wonder how their Dharma practice can help them. So it's going to change a little bit of how I give today's talk. I'm going to talk about how we stay inspired in our daily practice, but I'm also going to talk about this meeting between ourselves and things that we think are too big, and how we can work with those things that we think are too big. So we'll start with the first of the three excellences. They say when you're doing Dharma practice or listening to a teaching, you should practice what the Buddha called the three excellences: excellent at the beginning, excellent in the middle, and excellent at the end. Excellent in the beginning is making an aspiration that our time together bears fruit for us. Excellent in the middle is being patient with boring speakers. Did I say that out loud? Being patient with the hardships one undergoes in order to do that good thing. And then good at the end means that we reflect on the goodness that we have accomplished and dedicate the goodness to the benefit of all. So we'll start with good at the beginning. I'm going to recite the four-line refuge prayer in English. If it's a prayer that you're familiar with or you'd like to read it off of the sheet, you can. But if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can just join in your heart and your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to the benefit of all beings. And I'll recite this one time through. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Okay, thank you. Now I'll recite a short prayer of my own, and then we'll begin. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chiwo Pete Denshala Kadren Jembo Kone Je Sunte Kusun Tuking Adrup Saldu So. Okay, thank you. So, inner strength, a source of inner strength. a lot of people who come to practice Buddhist meditation say they do so at the advice of someone they know. They may be coming for their own reason, but they may actually be coming here because someone told them it would be a good idea. Maybe it's their life partner. Maybe it's someone at work. Maybe it's one of their care providers, whoever. They said, you know, meditation is good. You should check it out. And so many people come here because someone else suggested it. But the reason that they actually make it here is because something within themselves tells them that it would be good for them to check out meditation and to check out spiritual life. And so even though often the inciting factor is coming from outside of us, there's a part of us that knows that meditation is going to be beneficial and we want to try it. And so in a way, you could say our inner wisdom brought us here. Our inner wisdom brought us here. And you may kind of not know exactly what that means, your inner wisdom brought you here, but Kempo Karthar Rinpoche, when he first started teaching here, would often preface his talks by saying, you know, it's kind of a miracle that we're here together. Because we were born in different places at different times, and yet here we are together. Why is that? Why did we come together today? How is it that we're all in the same room? And he would say that the Buddhist teaching is that all of us have accomplished great virtue before today. You could say that we've accomplished great virtue in our youth or in our young adulthood or as we've gotten older, but we've accomplished a lot of goodness. In other words, we were kind. We were kind to ourselves sometimes and kind to others, and we did virtuous deeds to help others and benefit others. And the fruition of those of that goodness and virtue is coming into contact with something that can help us. And so coming into contact with meditation can help us. So our goodness bears fruit. In other words, if we have accomplished what is called good karma in our past, sometimes that good karma comes to fruition as meeting with spiritual practices that help us. So I think that this is a good way to explain what Kempo Rinpoche had to say. He said, it's your own goodness that brought you here. It's your own virtue that brought you here. And it's inevitable that we would have met because your goodness brought you here. Also, another great Tibetan teacher from the 70s, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, used to say that we do have an inner compass. We do have an inner compass. He did call it an inner wisdom. And it is guiding us in spite of what we are thinking sometimes. Okay, some people will call it their intuition. Some people will call it their instinct or their gut feeling. But some people are led toward goodness, even though their thoughts might be going in a completely different direction. And so in that way, our goodness brought us here. Now, there is a basis for this in Buddhism. You may or may not know this, but there's a basis for this in Buddhism. And that is because the Buddha taught that all of us have a mind, and that mind is the seat of all of our experience. We may be experiencing this room, the sounds and the feelings and so forth in this room with our bodies, but our minds are actually, the body's conveying the information, but the mind is what's experiencing this room. And so this, we have this mind, and it has all this amazing capability. And so we have the capability of experiencing everything through our mind. We can even experience our mind through our mind. And so that is what meditation is about, is being able to use our mind to experience itself. This was the truth discovered by the historical Buddha Shakyamuni 2,500 years ago, was that our mind can know itself and know itself completely, and through knowing itself completely can liberate itself from all of our thoughts and fears and concerns, that there's part of us that's already aligned with Buddhahood. And we call it, in Buddhism, we call it Buddha nature. Everybody has it. There is not a single being that doesn't possess a mind that has the potential to know itself. And that potential to know itself is called our Buddha nature. So you could say that even though our Buddha nature is not yet completely uncovered, our Buddha nature is not yet completely ripened. In other words, we're not Buddhas yet. Still, there is a little engine inside of us that is guiding us toward those things that are going to be useful and helpful to us. And sometimes that guidance happens in spite of our thoughts. Because a lot of people have thoughts that hold them back. I have them. Everybody has them. Those thoughts that talk to you when you don't want them to. The thoughts that say, well, you're not good enough. Or the thoughts that say, you're not good enough, you're not worthy. They'll say, you kind of mess things up, so you can't succeed. Those little thoughts that plague us. But what Kemper Vichai said about those thoughts, he said, those are our habitual ways of thinking, but they're just habits. They're not reality. They're just habits. He said, they are habits, and they can obscure our Buddha nature, just as clouds can pass in front of the moon or the sun and obscure them for a time. But because everything is impermanent, including those thoughts, everything is impermanent, eventually there'll be moments when the moon or the sun is uncovered. So there'll be moments when our wisdom actually shines through. And so our job in this life is to continuously clear the sky of clouds. In other words, continuously learn how to let go of negative habitual ways of being. And we do this one thought at a time. Yes, I'm sorry. Our thoughts happen one at a time, so we have to work with them one at a time. And this is where quiet sitting meditation is so valuable and so beneficial. Because when we sit and quietly meditate, our thoughts, as one teacher said, instead of rolling here and there with impulsiveness, our thoughts get flat bottoms on them. So they kind of just sit and they don't roll here and there impulsively. They just sit and then eventually they release. And everybody's experienced this in meditation at least once, where you were having a really good think in the middle of your meditation. You might have been thinking about something the boss said yesterday that you're still trying to find a good response to, or something that that happened at the store or in your family that's still kind of bugging you. But there is that moment in meditation where you notice that you're thinking, and you can label it thinking, and you can let it go, and then return to the breath for your fresh start in meditation. So when you do that, that thought actually disappears. If you went back to look for it, you might not even see it again. It's poof, it's gone. And so this is a way of proving to us that our thoughts are impermanent, just like the clouds that go in front of the sun or the moon. And so we have living proof that our thoughts are impermanent. And yet, sometimes after that thought has disappeared from our meditation and we've returned to watching the breath, part of us is nostalgic for that thought. I know, that sounds really weird, right? That we're, even though it might have been a difficult thought, we might feel a little awe, a little nostalgia for that thought, and so then we'll ask it to come back. Now, we may not actually even get the words out, aw, come on back. We might just feel that little pang of missing it, and then there it is again, and there it is. So it happens like this. I mean, that's how we live our lives, and this is how we get confused, because all these thoughts we have nostalgia for, we keep asking them to come back, whether we want to or not, because of habit. Okay, but because we can let go of the thought once, we can keep letting it go. And not only can we keep letting it go, we can introduce new thoughts to take their place. And these replacement thoughts can actually be incredibly healthy. these replacement thoughts could be a reminder of our Buddha nature. Oh, yeah, my teacher said I had Buddha nature. You know what? I think I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt on this. And I think I'm going to, just for this moment, I'm going to believe that I do have Buddha nature and act as if I have it. And by doing this, accepting this possibility of Buddha nature and accepting the possibility of being able to broaden and expand it, those thoughts that we've felt that nostalgia for, poof, they go away because we've now replaced them. We're sorry, thought. We thought we missed you, but we didn't. We've replaced you. We're sorry. No thoughts are irreplaceable. So then we replace them with thoughts such as, may I develop more kindness toward myself? May I develop more compassion? May I develop more wisdom? And so on. And so what we have to build is a determination. We have to build a determination to do that over and over and over again. And that, for me, has been my source of inner strength, has been just that determination to not give up on myself. Just that determination to believe what Kempo Kartha Rinpoche told us. I still remember being in the Dharma talk when he said, oh, by the way, you all have Buddha nature. For the first time, I still remember it. And at first I was like, I don't think so. And then I had to say, well, but he's saying it, so okay, he hasn't lied to me yet. So then gradually I came to understand that what he was saying was true. And so I kept reminding myself about it, saying, well, he had faith in me, so I guess I have to have some faith in me too. And so as a result, one of the things that we can do when we have these thoughts, feelings, and emotions is have the determination that we're going to do something different. I'm going to believe in my Buddha nature, and I'm going to try to make a change. I'm going to try to do something beneficial. And Kempo Kartha Rinpoche said that this is how our Dharma practice progresses. He said we start out with a lot of bad habits, and then we replace them with good habits of love and compassion and wisdom. And then eventually we go beyond habit altogether through the practices of deep penetrating insight meditation and Mahamudra meditation, which help us to break free of our confusion for once and for all. But we have to get to those practices. And how do we get to those practices? By never giving up. Just like, you know, you just never give up. There's always a place for us to go. And this is also the value of the three jewels of refuge. We spoke about this last week during the refuge class. When we may not have faith and confidence in our own Buddha nature yet, but we can have faith and confidence that the historical Buddha actually lived and actually attained awakening. So for now, we're going to give history the benefit of the doubt and make a statement that we believe in the reality of the Buddha that is out there, meaning the historical Buddha. We're going to have confidence that the historical Buddha really lived, really attained awakening, and that we want to do it too. So we're going to, for the beginning, the Buddha is external to us. But then gradually, the external Buddha, by working with the teachings of that external Buddha, we begin to see in those moments of reflection our own inner potential for awakening. And so this requires repetition. So the first thing that helps us in our everyday life is that we know we have Buddha nature, and the second thing is we keep reminding ourselves of what is positive and what is constructive. And so first we know it, and then we remind ourselves, and then we never give up. So those three things, knowing about Buddha nature, remembering it and repeating it, and repeatedly taking refuge in the Buddha and so on, and then making that the way we live our life, that will help us to be an inner source of strength for us. Because it is true, the world is big, and sometimes it can seem overwhelming. But we do have a great deal of power within us. And if we can keep ourselves encouraged and reminded, then we'll be able to continue to expand our Buddha nature. There was a quotation that I posted on social media some days ago, and it really helped me a lot, because it was about what happens when I'm going to see if I can bring it up and read it to you, but it's about this never giving up. And I don't know if I'm going to be lucky, but I might be, and that it might be here. Yeah, here it is. It says, we may sometimes feel discouraged about our ability to be spiritual people. Our habits and nagging doubts might sometimes weigh us down. But if we remember that we have basic goodness and can gradually, eventually take charge of our thoughts, hope is available to us in every moment. The great master Jigme Lingpa once said, even if you may not always practice your prayer or meditation, even if you may not always practice prayer and meditation, if you have a constant wish to practice and a constant concern about not being able to practice as much as you want, you are far wealthier than the most materially successful person. If you put emphasis on generating the motivation to be kind and to enlighten all sentient beings, there is no comparison. You have surpassed what any other religion or spiritual system can do. So a lot of people look at Buddhism and say, I'll never remember the four of this or the eight of that or the three of this or the six of this. I'll never remember all of this. Well, you can go beyond even the eight, the four, the six, and the three if you just maintain the wish to be of benefit to yourself and others. Just maintaining that wish, maintaining the confidence in your basic goodness, that's a source of strength that no one can take away from you, because you've given it to yourself. Nobody can take it away. It's there naturally. No one can remove it from you. It's yours. And so if we can practice like that, then we have a great deal to be grateful for and a great deal to build upon. And so that is kind of what I wanted to say today about our inner source of strength. We have Buddha nature, and through taking refuge every day and every day and every day in the Buddha as our teacher, the Dharma as our path, and the Sangha as our community, we repeat our faith and confidence in our Buddha nature. And then by doing this over and over again and not giving up, we will make progress. So that was what I wanted to say on the topic of inner strength. Now, I've been asked by some of my Dharma friends to talk a little bit about the fear and concern that people are feeling these days about the coronavirus. And many people are saying, well, you know, I live in the center of the country. All of those cases are on the East and West Coast, and I don't have anything to worry about. But still, some people do feel concern because world travel is real. You know, we can go from place to place on the globe and so forth and so on. There's always the chance. And people say, well, what Dharma practice should I do? How should I work with these thoughts and feelings that I have of fear and concern? And I think that it's a really good question, so I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about that and giving some thoughts that I've had about this as I've reflected on it this week. Kempo Karsa Rinpoche once said to me very, very long time ago, he said, we cannot let our minds be ruled by fear. He said, it's hard to live in a state of fear. So he said, you can't live that way. So what you have to do is you have to find ways to work with your fear. You have to find ways to, he didn't say these words, but basically take two steps toward your fear and shake hands with it. He didn't say it like that. He said something to the effect of confronting it and coming face to face with it and making a different decision. And so, but how is that done exactly with something that's unseen, like a virus and something and so forth? How do we walk up and shake hands with our fear, especially when we've been told not to shake hands because it could be germs? The first thing that we can do is recognize that there are things that are not under our control. There's a lot of things in this world that are not under our control. And that and one of those things is whether we will come in contact with someone who has sickness or whatever. And this actually is true just for the common cold, as it is for a pandemic virus. And to recognize that what we do have control over is our own thoughts, and what we do have control over is our own words and actions. So what I think we can do with our thoughts and with our words and actions is to try to be aware of them. If we are aware that we're feeling fear at that moment, even if we don't know exactly what we're fearful of, one of the things that we can do is remember our Buddha nature and think of the Buddha as being external to us just for a moment, and ask for the Buddha to give us a blessing. Now, you may say, well, the Buddha died 2,500 years ago. How is it possible? Well, the Buddha taught that the minds of awakened beings don't disappear. They're still here, and we can call upon them. It's not that the Buddha's mind is going to wrap a protective blanket around you. It's not exactly like that. But by thinking of his realized potential, his Buddhahood, we can have a sense of knowledge that there is something greater than ourselves, something that we are working toward, which is our Buddha nature, and that we're not going to let anything, not illness, not anything, stop us from working toward awakening. So Kempo Rinpoche, when he was giving teachings to people back in the old days, at the very beginning of Dharma, I think he didn't know us very well. You know, we dressed funny and we acted strangely and we spoke a different language. I mean, how did he cope? I mean, right? So one time he was going to give a teaching and he asked everyone in the room to, before he started teaching, he said, I want you just to relax your mind for a minute. So he had everyone relax their minds. And he said, then I want you to close your eyes and imagine that the Buddha, the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni, is right here in front of you and facing you. He's floating in space, just a little bit above you, and he's facing you. Think that he possesses everything you wish for, enlightenment, happiness, goodness. And then imagine that he shines, he's made of golden light. Imagine that he's made of golden light, and that he shines that golden light upon you. And that golden light removes all of your obstacles and obscurations, all of your negative habits, and gives you everything that you need. Gives you strength. That light gives you goodness. That light gives you strength. That light gives you whatever you need in order to go forward in your spiritual path. And then he said, imagine that the Buddha, made of golden light, dissolves into a mist of golden light, and that comes upon you and blesses you. And that then you can think, I have obtained the blessing of the Buddha. And it wasn't until after that was finished that he taught us. So he wanted us to take a moment to draw a line between who we were in the moment before we did that meditation and who we would be in the moment after that meditation, and to recognize that we had entered into a place that was different. And so I think this is the power of visualization practice. I think this is the power of confidence. It reminds us of what we already knew. It reminds us of what we already knew. We already knew that we had Buddha nature, but maybe it wasn't real for us until the moment when that golden Buddha dissolved into light and merged with us and gave us access to the knowledge of our own Buddha nature. So whatever was the reason, it worked. The people in the room said afterward that they felt as though they were ready to hear the words and to take them in. So if you're feeling fear at any time in the future, you can do this exercise. It's now the transmission that Rinpoche gave us in that room that day has now been given to you in this room today, and that you now have permission to practice this with yourself. Whenever you feel that fear, think of the Buddha as being there present with you. Supplicate him with your mind and heart, asking for his blessing, and imagine that he shines the light upon you, purifies everything that is not Buddha nature, and that he then dissolves into you and blesses you. And this may not make your fear go away, but what it will do is it will change how you experience it. You'll be in a different place when you open your eyes and readdress your life. So that's something I wanted to share that was given to me in the past that helps with fear, is receiving, asking for and receiving the blessing of the Buddha. Now, the rest of it is doing what we call mind training, or lojong, training our mind in love and compassion. And one of the ways of doing this is through making the wish that all beings be free from suffering. And so we can, when we feel the fear, we can say, may I be free from fear, may all beings be free from fear, and may all of us become like the Buddha. You could recite the Four Immeasurables. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have the freedom from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they have that great happiness, which is freedom from suffering. May they dwell in great equanimity, free from attachment and aversion to those near and far. And by thinking things like this, it will help to calm our mind. And then after that, we have to wash our hands. That's a joke. I'm referring to the Centers for Disease Control in the United States. Their requirements, their requests for us to help prevent the spread of virus is by washing our hands, and frequently through the day, and using hand sanitizer and all of those things, practicing the 6-foot rule, trying to be at a remove from people who are ill. And if you have those secondary conditions that put you at risk for complications from this virus, then you're asked to practice isolating. So those of you who have those conditions have just been given a free retreat. But it's not free. We all know that we have to work for a living. But if we do have the freedom to isolate, and we have the reason to do so, well, we've just given ourselves retreat time. I am one of those people, by the way. I spoke with my physician this week, and his message was, where there is active virus, you must avoid. And so that's why I'm staying home this week and not going to New York City, which is where I was going before going to our home monastery in upstate New York. So we have to practice all these pragmatic things, washing the hands and so forth. And people have been joking around that in order to wash your hands for the 20 seconds that you're supposed to wash your hands, you should recite Happy Birthday, sing the Happy Birthday song, and that's 20 seconds. Well, I have found 3 more things that are 20 seconds long that are Buddhist, and it might give you a tickle to know that you can recite Buddhist prayers while you are washing your hands, and it will give you your 20 seconds. One of them is the mantra Om Mani Padme Hung. If you're familiar with the mantra Om Mani Padme Hung, and you are familiar with the melody that we chant it with, Om Mani Padme Hung, Om Mani Padme Hung, Om Mani Padme Hung, Om Mani Padme Hung. 3 times through, the melody three times through is a little more than 20 seconds. So there you go. That's a quickie. That's okay. Then you also can recite the prayer of taking refuge, or you can recite Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha, and you can recite that like maybe five times, and then you have your 20 seconds. Or if you are familiar with the 100-syllable mantra, the purification mantra of Vajrasattva, Om Benzasato Samhaya Manupalaya Benzasato Teno Patita Dridume Bhavasuto Kayome Bhavasupo Kayome Bhava Anuratume Bhava Sarva Siddhi Mentrayata Sarva Karma Sutame Sitam Shriyakuru Hong Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Benza Mame Munta Benzi Bhava Mahasamaya Sato Ah. So there you have it. A little more than 20 seconds. And you're saying the purification mantra, it's just call it value added. So in any case, we all have to do our best to take care of ourselves during this time. And if you're familiar with the Medicine Buddha mantra, you can bless people and things, and if you are taking medicines, you can bless those things with the Medicine Buddha by reciting the Medicine Buddha mantra over them. Tayata Om Bekanze Bekanze Maha Bekanze Radza Samungate Soa, and then blow on the medication and take your medicine that way. You can also blow on water and then drink the water. So there's lots of things you can do to help yourself. But the main thing is to practice all of the things they told us to practice in order to stay healthy. So anyway, I just wanted to say a few things about that, and because it was something that was on people's minds, and therefore I wanted to be able to say something about it today. So we have time. So if you have anything you want to discuss, whether it's about the 20 seconds or if it's about refuge or if it's about Buddha nature, or if you just want to ask a random question, I am totally okay with all of those. So we have the question microphone open. So if you have a question, head over and you can get in line. And it looks like we'll have time for maybe three or four.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was thinking about, thank you for the talk, Lama Kati, as usual. That was most enjoyable. So with the coronavirus, I was thinking a lot. I mean, like we all do. And I had some thoughts coming into my mind, and I wanted to share them with the community and to have your opinion, Lama Kati, maybe on this. I was thinking about karma, and I was thinking that this disease comes from dead animal that people in Wuhan butchered. And the consequence of this epidemic is that we are going to stop traveling, we're going to lower our consumption. And I was really wondering, is it like some kind of karma because we are destroying the planet, because we are torturing animals? And it looks like it's, to me, it looks like it's more than a coincidence. So I just wanted to share this with you and have probably an opinion on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts about this, because these exact thoughts have crossed my mind this week. And I wondered about them. These exact things, I wondered about these. So the fact that I wondered about them myself means I don't have an answer for you, because I was wondering about that too. Because we're human beings and we have these amazing intellects and minds that can think these things. But just because we can think them doesn't mean we should. So here's kind of what I can tell you about what's been said in the past by Kempo Carter Rinpoche regarding the difference between individual karma and group karma. Kempo Rinpoche once said that there are these two types, which is all of the people together have a group karma that they create together. Now, whether that means the whole planet has a group karma, I can't tell you. That we would have to ask an enlightened being for that. But I do find it interesting that we are all here right now and we're experiencing this. Some people have, and then there are some people who have the individual karma that that they have accumulated in the past. And they will either experience the illness, or they will experience fear of the illness, or they will experience suffering from the illness or whatever. Everyone who hears about it will feel something, because it's frightening. And the one Lama once said of a natural disaster that some people, because of previous karma, had the karma to be injured by something, but other people had only the karma to be frightened as though they were injured, you know, injured by their fear. So he said, again, this teacher said, only enlightened individuals can read the karma of an individual or of a group for that matter, or of a group for that matter. So the bottom line for me personally is that we do have an opportunity to reflect on our individual behavior and our behavior as a group of human beings. And if we choose to reflect and change our behavior, even though it might be based on fear of a consequence, that's still not the worst thing that could happen. And I think that if we take advantage of this opportunity to recognize how, you know, reflect on our own causing of fear to other people. Sometimes we, you know, we don't recognize that we are causing fear to other people by the things we say. We may think that, oh, I just gave them my honest opinion, but it might have hurt them or caused them to feel fear. If we reflect on that, we can say, you know, I have done all of these things. I have caused fear. I have caused injury. I have done this. And recognizing that and confessing to the Buddha as the witness, I mean, he's beyond all of these faults, right? So he's our perfect witness. We can say to the Buddha, well, here's my karma. I am born at a time of this illness. So, okay. So I regret all of my negative deeds, thoughts and words of the past. I regret them all. And I ask for all of them to be purified, which the Buddha said, if you make a confession and feel regret, that removes the negative karma and so on. And so you make this confession, and then the Buddha, you can take the golden light blessing from the Buddha. Now, this does not mean that you're going to not become ill or not have misfortune, but this means that you're willing to take these things as reminders and instructions on things you can do to take care of yourself spiritually as well as physically. Does this make sense? So I'm sorry I can't answer the question about group karma. But it is true that group karma does exist. The Buddha, even during his lifetime, spoke about a situation where a group of individuals caused the death of someone. And then they later themselves experienced death because of this, that they cut someone else's life short, that they experienced that because they did not regret, did not confess, did not make remedy, and so on. And so what Kempo Kartha Rinpoche told me one time, he said, we all have a lot of negative karma, but we all have a lot of good karma too. So he said, our job is to reduce and purify the bad and to increase the good. So I'm sorry I can't give you but I've reflected on exactly all of those things. So if we can reduce our consumption of fossil fuels, if we can reduce our consumption of animals and our causing of pain to other people, then, wow, that's a good way to use this feeling that we have toward bringing us farther on our path. So thank you. Yeah, thank you. Anybody have other? Yes. Uh-huh.
Hi, Lama Kathy. Thank you for the teaching.
Yeah,
and yeah. I wanted to, I think this is kind of more a comment, but kind of what I notice is again and again, what really resonates is when you and other teachers speak about, you know, like your inner compass and how really it starts with being kind and being kind toward yourself. And I guess I kind of just remark at, you know, you're doing it right when you recognize your vulnerability or you feel that tender heart and that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. That always really resonates.
Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because I think that's true. You know, when we think we've got it all figured out, we don't. And I think that feeling of like, well, I've got it all figured out. I know the score. You know, I know how this is. It's there's something that is removing us from the company of others, and it's removing us from kinship with others. And I think that once we realize we are flawed, then that helps us to feel kinship with everyone. So thank you.
Yeah.
We have time for one more if there is one more. Okay. Well, then we'll sit quietly, and we're going to do a mental dedication rather than a spoken one today. Today, we're going to dedicate the goodness of this session to all sentient beings. Thinking of all beings everywhere, we make the aspiration that they are free from fear, that they're free from illness, that they're free from danger, and that they meet with individuals who will envelop them with goodness and protection. We make the aspiration that all beings see their Buddha nature. We make the aspiration that all beings meet the pure teachings and attain Buddhahood. And we make the aspiration that once they've attained Buddhahood, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings without end. We dedicate our goodness to all beings transcending suffering and this world. We dedicate the merit with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.